I'm at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum with 2010 inductee Bobby Adamson. Bobby, tomorrow you get much overdue recognition for your outstanding career in sprint cars. What do you feel?
Well, I feel rather honored to be able to look amongst all these names out here. I don't know if I belong there or not. It's quite a, I don't know how to put it, quite an honor to be amongst that group.
Well, Bobby, you got your career starting in a class called the Hooligans at the Greater Pittsburgh Speedway in Clinton. Our host, Don Gamble, says that he saw your very first race there. Do you remember how you did that night?
No, my heavens, no. Those cars were crash fests, and I'm amazed that somebody can remember it ever happening.
Well, when was it that you got your start in sprint cars?
After I had attempted to run those Hooligans for approximately a year, I realized that there was... I got tired of fixing up wrecked cars, and so I... You pull me back a minute. I have to think about that. How did I actually get into one? At this minute, I can't even think. But it was only a year after starting the Hooligans, and I knew that I didn't want to be in just crashed all the time. Can you turn that off and let me think a minute? I lived near a man that owned a race car and a Volio service station, a Volio. And he had a homemade car that a guy named Frank Stamble drove. And it was like the old original modifieds, where it was a full-bodied car, coupe. And one time he was going to do something to the engine, and he said he'd take me a ride. So we took it down along the railroad tracks, and he took me a ride in it, and I was astonished at the throttle response, and all I could do was hang on. I didn't have a seat, but I was taken aback. And so I started right away trying to get one of them, get him to make me one, a Volio, Henry Avolio, which he did. And they built another car, and I got started in racing like that.
So was that your first Hooligan ride, or was that the first sprint car?
It was the first modified ride.
Okay.
The Hooligans were strictly a stock flathead Ford. This was a Chevy V8, and it had lots of smoke for them for that day. It certainly impressed me. And then things just boomeranged, and I ended up with a Canadian sprint car that we bought, and I can't even tell you that it had a name, but it was a regular sprint car, rail, but a sprint car.
Mm-hmm. So that would have been the car that you first campaigned in Western Pennsylvania and Ohio?
Yes.
Now, back in those days, you raced at Greater Pittsburgh and Debo and Skyline, I guess?
Yes.
And I know you did some traveling.
Well, we ran Katanning and Franklin and Sharon. Probably Chillicothe. I run more than I remember,
okay.
You know, but okay.
You got probably the first famous car that you're associated with was Wilbur Hawthorne's 35 car, and you and Wilbur had some very good years. How'd you get hooked up with Wilbur?
His driver was named Bobby Burris, and they had originally cut down an Indianapolis big champ car, and they modified it down to a sprint car wheelbase and size, and Bobby ran that car quite well. But Wilbur then bought this car from Floyd Trevis, and Bobby drove it a few races, but he didn't like the feeling in the car. The car was open, much more open. He's out in the open. similar to you sawing the top off of your car and getting in a race with it. It is the feeling that gave him, I guess. And he just didn't like it. Although he ran and won some races with it, he didn't like it. So Wilbur was looking for somebody else. And when I got the opportunity, he laid it, that car and me just fit like a glove. That was the best race car I've ever sat in. And even though Travis, I've driven several of Travis's cars, that is the ultimate feel for me. And every driver feels different in a different car. You know, I've talked to lots of them that's driven Travis cars or any car, and some will feel good to them and some won't. And that's exactly the way the Travis cars are. And I've driven one that was owned by Hawthorne that I didn't never feel safe the first, taking one lap with it. But
now, when you won the Greater Pittsburgh Championship, was that in Wilbur's car?
No, and I didn't win the Greater Pittsburgh Championship.
Okay, Walt Weimer gave me that little bit of information.
Well, I got very, very close.
Okay.
But it was in the car, the Canadian sprint car that I told you about, prior to me getting into the 35. And it came down to the last race, and had a little problem with another driver, and I didn't finish that race.
Another story for another time.
Yeah.
Now, you were one of the first drivers from outside of central Pennsylvania to make the move and go east and race the sprint cars. What was it that led you to central Pennsylvania?
The reason I got the opportunity to run a half mile somewhere, and I don't remember where it was, and I liked the half mile racetrack. And we came back through Williams Grove when they were having a race, and we pulled in to watch the race, and they allowed us into the infield with the car, but they wouldn't let us race it because they had the other class of cars, which weren't full-blown sprint cars. So some time went by, and Ray Tilley was winning everything down here in a hidden Travis car. It didn't look like a car like mine, but it was a car like mine, and nobody could compete with them. And the fan base was dropping off, and so Jack called the Pittsburgh area, called me and said, would we be interested in running? And if so, see if I knew any other drivers that might like to come along. So there were several of us that did. I couldn't wait to get here. But Gus Linder, and, well, there's other names I'd have to go back and figure it out. Lou Blaney came.
Ted Wise.
Yes, and there was another guy that was in the service from up north of us. He came along, and like I say, I can't give you names, but several of us.
Was Eddie Zirkel in that crowd?
No, Eddie Zirkel was already here. He was in one of those other cars like they run here regular. Mm-hmm. No, it wasn't with him. But I just loved this racetrack. I mean, it just was like a miracle that everything was falling together for me. That race, that 35 car, and I got along good. And now the team of us and this racetrack got along good.
So, well, you had great success at Williams Grove that first year. You won quite a few features, and including the National Open, and I guess you won the point championship that year as well, your first year at Williams Grove.
Yes, so we had a lot of success here. A lot of good people, a lot of good fans. It's been the best years of my life.
Then comes the end of the year, and you decide to go to California. How did that happen?
I think it was sort of a joke. We had won the big race, and I don't recall if it was 100 laps or 150 that time. But they were both. And we went to the banquet, and the owner said, Wilbur Hawthorne, "Would you want to go out west and run?" And I thought it was a joke. And I said, sure. It wasn't a joke. So I they caught a plane and they towed the car out there, and that's quite a story. That's quite a story about that. I'm a kid from the country, and I walk into that airport, and there is the shortest miniskirts I ever seen in my life. And I'm leaning up against a pole just watching this. And here they drove up in with the race car in front of that airport out there in Los Angeles, whatever town that is. And there it's sitting, and they come in, and I'm just standing there watching these girls go by. And they had to get me. And I can't even talk. I mean, these miniskirts, and them to come from the country and never see them. And they were about 6 inches long, you know. It was amazing. We talked about that for years.
Now, you put on a pretty amazing performance at Ascot for an outsider. You set fast time, you won the dash, and you won the whole shooting match. And you made some friends in the pay line. Tell us about that.
Uh-oh, you've been talking to somebody. Okay, yes. Yes. This almost has to start at the beginning. They were very uncordial, the people out there. They were the drivers, the owners, the track people. They were like a clan of their own and didn't associate with nobody else. And there's several things that happened, but after the race, the pay line is, they're all in pay line talking and chatting, and I walk up to that pay line, and it was like you threw a switch. Silence. There was nobody spoke a word for maybe 30 seconds or so, which seems like an eternity, and all of a sudden somebody in the forward end of the pay line started laughing and said, "We think just because we're CRA and on the West Coast, nobody, we can't be beat." And he said, "Personally, I've never been beat so bad in my life." And I, from what I can understand, it was Bobby Hogel. But he came back to me, and I said, "If anybody knows where to get some beer, I'll buy." Right? So he said, I know. So I gave him some money. He wasn't gone 5 or 10 minutes, and he came back with a case of beer. And after that, everybody got a beer. It was the friendliest group of guys you ever want to meet. But prior to that, boy, they were tight-mouthed.
Well, now, you did something a little different out there in California than they were used to seeing. You were running a big right rear tire like you ran in Pennsylvania, right?
That's right. In fact, from what I can understand, when they seen them, they sort of laughed and said they wouldn't work. But they did work, and they worked anywhere on the racetrack. And I didn't even know they realized that until I read it in the papers afterwards that I had this tire when I was out there. I didn't even know they even seen it, you know. But I heard that they just seen it and laughed and said it won't work. But that was afterwards, you know. I didn't know it until I read it in the paper.
You didn't know any better, so it worked.
Yeah, and in fact, that tire can be carried on into USAC. When USAC came to Williams Grove and got a much slower time than the other qualifiers with the Humper, they bought every Humper that was on the truck from Roy's Racing Tires, which is where I work. They come and bought every one of them. They cleaned they took every tire off the truck. They bought them to try them. You know, them, the USAC idea. If they need something, they'll go get it. And they went and got it quick.
Well, just to tell you a little story about tires here at Knoxville. Back when Dick Tobias was racing with USAC, he came in here to Knoxville and cleaned their clocks. And Ray Lee Goodwin, who was sitting out right next to you out in the on the second floor here, finished second to Tobias that day. And he went over and looked at the tire, and he wanted to protest the car. They denied the protest, and Ray Lee made such a fuss about the tire, Tobias said he'd sell you he sold him the tire, used. Ray Lee bought that tire from Tobias and won the next 5 races here at Knoxville on that same tire.
Well, that is amazing. He never told me, and I know him quite well. He never told me that. He probably didn't want to admit that he protested that car.
Yeah, you'll have to ask him about that.
I will.
I had that on tape a couple of years ago from Ray Lee. Now, you got hooked up with another Hall of Famer named Al Hamilton. How did that come about?
I think that might be able to be said, the trucker strike. That would be my best guess. My owner owned a trucking company, and when the truckers went on strike, it affected all the drivers and the trucking companies and money. You know what I mean? There wasn't money to run the car and tow it back and forth from Ohio. I guess that's the only way I can put it. It's a possibility, but it went downhill. The quality of the race car and such went downhill until Hamilton knew it and come and asked me if I'd be interested, and I took him up on the offer.
You had some pretty successful years with Al as well.
Yes, Al. There was another. It was also a Travis car, and it was a good car. Although I can't say that it was better than the original 35 because I fell in love with that car. But it was a good car, and we ran well, and we made a lot of good races.
Now, some of the bigger wins that you had driving for Al, you. Back in the early 70s, there was a series called the All-Stars that you traveled around in Pennsylvania and Ohio, and I believe you won 300 lappers that year with the All-Stars.
You know, I wouldn't even know that. Every time there was a 100-lap race, I loved the long races. The longer, the better. And so I would get in anyone and everyone that I could find. And if I won three, I wouldn't know even where they were. But now it's many, many years later. But I like long races. I can't explain it. The only way I can even get close to explaining that is every once in a while a driver will make a miscue or do something wrong on the track, and it tends to slow them down the whole way around the track. That's my idea. And to me, it don't bother me at all. That I can go as fast at the end as I could at the beginning. And I think anybody I run with will tell you that. If the track can get slick, I can adjust. I can still go. And I've been called a lot of things. One of them is by Lynn Paxton was Featherfoot, because when the track got hard and slick, he could just shake his head and say, "I don't know how you make that thing go," but I could do it. Pat myself on the back.
Now you scored wins at many of the famous speedways, in addition to Williams Grove and Sealands Grove. And I saw your name on Susquehanna Speedway's win list, and you won sprint car races at Reading and Hagerstown and Jennerstown, Tri-City. But another outstanding accomplishment was when you beat the IMCA at the Allentown Fairgrounds.
Yeah. Boy, you got good notes, I'll tell you that. Yes. Yes, I was following Jerry Record in warm-ups over there, and he had on a pair of knobbies, and he threw something off the racetrack and went through the windshield and threw my shield and hit me above the left eye, and they had to take me to the hospital and sew me back together up there. It didn't knock me out, but so the lady at the hospital is right beside the racetrack, and there's a woman doctor sewing me up, and I can hear the race cars over there running. I'm telling her, "Hurry up, hurry up, I gotta get back over there," and she couldn't believe I was going back over there and run a race car. I said, "Oh yeah, but we had two features." So the first one, I wasn't back in time, and Gus Linder drove the car, and he was was spinning the tires real bad, so we changed gears to quite high gears. In fact, we went up to a mile gear, which we didn't even own. Wilbur had to go buy a gear off somebody else, and we put it in a car, and we were able to come back and win the race, win the second feature. But I also had won the year before there. That's a fun racetrack. It's clamshells, ground up clamshells, they tell me. But it works.
Now you had some success with IMCA down at the old plant field in Tampa as well.
Yes. I went the first time, I guess I went there, I was in a car that I really hadn't driven before, out of Pennsylvania, a yellow number 12, and it caught on fire in hot laps first day, and it had a plugged fuel nozzle. So the next morning I go up to the place where they, the motel where they were, and took the hood off, see, well, I guess we're going to fix it, you know, but they weren't up yet. Well, when they got out of bed and seen that I had taken the hood off, they were a little upset. They fired me right there and went home, took the car back to Pennsylvania. So then the next year, I had gotten into this 35, and it worked well down there. And I won quite a few. I won the Winter Nationals 2 years in a row with that car. Yes, I liked Tampa. That was a funny racetrack, but I liked it.
Well, Bobby, I remember seeing you the first time race. The first time I ever saw you race was at the Reading Fairgrounds in Wilbur's 35, and I guess that was maybe about 1968 or so.
Good.
And that was when Reading was running some midweek sprint car races. And just about everybody who was anybody in sprint car racing was there. You and Ray Tilley and Lou Blaney and Ted Wise and Henry Jacoby, and the list goes on and on. And they were just some outstanding sprint car races, and have lasted with me forever.
Well, I don't know if you're talking about the same race that I'm going to tell you about, but it was at Reading. It was a sprint car race.
That was a, I believe you're going
to... Did I finish second?
A USAC race. Now you,
did I finish second?
No, I think you won at Reading. In they were wing cars back then, but I remember you racing with USAC at Reading without wings.
Yes.
And you're going to tell me about the time you finished second to somebody and beat a good friend of yours named Larry Dixon.
Oh, who you've been talking to? I mean, this story, I don't know. I don't know where you're getting this, but it's true. Okay. We didn't have a USAC engine, and I was told that I could run their race if I get an engine. So my owner went to Ralphie Quarterson's garage in Ohio, and he had a legal engine that he had worn out and was out in the junk. Rain and everything on it, he threw it away. So he gave it to Wilbur. So Wilbur brought it home, cleaned it up, put new bearings and rebuilt it, put it in the car. We go to Reading. We run the race, and I finished second in the race in a car, H&H Tool from somewhere out in California. Bruce Walkup won the race. And I was second. But Larry Dixon was mad about that, and he protested my car. So he had to put up $50 to file the protest. And they took the car over to Tobias's speed shop and checked the engine. And in the meantime, all the drivers, everybody's waiting in the pay line at Reading in a trailer where the payoff. And pretty soon, a man named Duke Cook, who a driver, he come back, and he didn't even get anywhere near that trailer where we were, and he hollered out loud, "You damn crybabies, that engine's not only legal, it's too little." The worst thing that nobody knew about was I only had 7 cylinders. And on top of that, the engine may have been too little, but I had another plug nozzle and only had 7 cylinders, and was thrilled just to finish second. But it was quite a race. And I got Larry Dixon's $50. I still got it, too.
Well, I don't know if Larry's going to be here this weekend, but I'm sure if he would be, if he's here, he'll be one of the happiest men to see you inducted as his peer in the National Sprinter Hall of Fame.
I hope he shows up. We used to hunt together, and we were good friends. But he didn't like me beating him.
Well, Bobby, congratulations on your accomplishment. It's a much overdue recognition for you to get inducted here at Knoxville, and we're mighty glad to have you.
Well, getting old didn't help me with a microphone. I don't promise anything. I won't have any of them great stories to tell, and I hope I survive this.
Well, just consider this your hot lap session for tomorrow afternoon.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.